Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference 2023, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. The Gaylord at Opry, what a center, what a place. We have amazing speakers, amazing training, five of the most impactful days of your career. Check it out at streetcop.com. You do not want to miss out. There is a room code available for a discounted room. Sign up now at streetcop.com. 111-110. Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I'm going to be a guy who wrote a book, and I don't want to misquote it, but it's The Arsonist in the Workplace. This author, What is it?
It's The Arsonist in the Office.
It's the same shit, Pete.
There you go.
But we have Pete Havel here. We actually got on a call last week discussing some business with Street Cop Training. And I thought it would be a good idea to bring Pete on because I think he's got a firm grasp on leadership, some of the issues that I think is plaguing probably most workplaces, but certainly law enforcement. And I'll let Pete give you his bio, and then I'll start firing the questions away at Pete. So, Pete, give us your one-minute bio of who on God's green earth you are.
All right. Love alienating people right off the bat. So let me tell you, I spent most of my career thus far as a lobbyist and political consultant. All those nasty 30-second ads people hate. Helped write them, worked with politicians all around the country. And what puts me here in front of your audience is I had something that everybody dreads, a certain percentage of us are going to have, and that is finding yourself in the job from hell and trying to figure out how to survive it. Learned a lot during that path that that sent me into a bad workplace, and wrote a book, and speaking to a lot of folks in law enforcement and all sorts of first responders.
What made you write the book?
I learned so much because I got my butt kicked. Found myself, as a lot of us do, after the fact, you know, after the game's over, you're watching tape and you're thinking, oh man, during that play, such and such happened. I knew I should have gone left when I went right. Learned a lot of those dynamics. My career got impacted in a big way because when I spoke up about some crazy stuff going on inside my organization, they cut me off at the knees. They terminated me. And didn't want that to happen to anybody else. And the other part of it, frankly, when you've got that giant a crater on your resume, you want to do something good with it. Because frankly, I needed to do something good for my family and help us. But biggest thing is helping other people make sure that doesn't happen to them. Because it's life-changing, and not in a good life-changing kind of way.
When you started your career at this organization, how long did it take you to figure out that something was wrong?
About 3 days. Yeah. I'll tell you a real quick story on that. Walked into the office. Things seemed strange. I mean, everything from body language to the silence when you'd walk through the offices, something didn't feel right. And I tell the story in the book about being called down to my CEO's office, who tells me, hey, Pete, I probably should have told you all of this before you took the job, but I don't think you'd be here. Here's the deal. And he went on to tell me that I had been hired to work with and partner with that employee that at that point had filed somewhere between 2 and 3 dozen complaints against people in the organization, was blackmailing people, was sabotaging other people's work, was blowing up stuff of our clients that had targeted in some of the most personal and vicious ways different people in the organization. He informed me at that point, told me a quick little story, and here's a spoiler alert on my title, that this person, I call her Hazel in the book, but fictionalize that the story he told me was essentially about a fire department, so better than a police department for your audience, but a fire department that had become the arsonists inside their organization and burned down everything in their path when they did it. That's who this person was, destroying everything, destroying anyone that got in the way of them, and had all sorts of strange things going on in their head. And I tell about my story of survival, trying to get through it and what I learned along the way.
How long did you stay at that organization, knowing 3 days in?
Yeah, it was longer than I should have is the answer. But a couple things going into my mind at that time. Number one, I've succeeded in every other job that I had before. So that was one thing. So a curtain, call it cockiness, arrogance, self-confidence, stupidity, whatever you want to go with on that. I stayed a few years because I kept on thinking in the back of my mind, if I do the right things, if I say the right things, if I succeed and deliver for my employers in the right way, surely when crazy goes to the next level, my leadership is going to step in. But I learned a lot about what weak leadership looks like and people that frankly want to sweep stuff under the rug, bury things, and people that want to play a game of, weighing pros and cons. They looked at the disaster and untouchable employee that they had on one side. And then me on the other side is the guy that frankly, my goal was to not only help myself, but protect my organization. Their thought was all about how do we protect ourselves and how do we make sure that all the dirty laundry that we've been covering up for years because of this employee and other things going on inside the organization, do we lose Havel or do we lose the person that is going to go to the press, file lawsuits, drag stuff out, and take the organization through the ninth circle of hell? They went with the selfish decision, but I learned there's a lot of organizations that do that if you don't have the right leadership in place.
If you could go back to yourself on the third day when you realize, oh, this place is, we got some problems here. Yeah. What would you tell yourself now, many years later?
Make my evacuation plan instantly. If you can't trust your leadership, and obviously at that point, I hadn't had an opportunity to trust or not trust my leadership. If you can't trust your direct manager, if frankly they are setting you up to fail, if they are looking, and this is a challenge that you guys have in law enforcement for the most understandable reason of all. You've got a bunch of leaders at the top of organizations that are only going to be there for a few more years, right? They've achieved what they want to, and they're going to move on and get the retirement and the new opportunity that they deserve. Leaders can do one of two things with that. One, ride out strong and say, you know what, we're going to make this the best place possible. Or they can duck and run and think, all right, I'm going to do my victory lap. I'm going to get the trophies and everything else that goes with chief of the year or whoever else of the year. I'm going to go out and essentially sit through the next few years and hope nothing bad goes on. Hoping nothing bad goes on is a terrible strategy if you haven't locked down your culture. Because if people sense weakness, that's when the bad stuff starts happening.
If somebody started a career now or a profession or a new job, the very micro, do you think it's worth the benefit of the doubt to stick around and see how it plays out? And on top of that, how long should somebody wait to see if it is worth it?
I think there's a couple factors that go in there. Number one, if you jump, what are your job opportunities elsewhere? These days, frankly, that thing about being a job hopper, us post-COVID and the workplace, what it is, people jumping around, this thing called the Great Resignation that they're talking about, you can probably move pretty quickly, especially if you're younger and not get hit too badly by it. If you've been around for a while and you've got the seniority, and frankly, and I know in some states, in law enforcement specifically, if you move, you might be risking something on the retirement side. So you want to give yourself full understanding of what the risks are, full understanding of sitting there, your appetite for putting up with it, because at some point, after a few discussions, you may realize, all right, my leadership knew nothing about all the crazy stuff that's going on here, and they're going to do something, or they're going to deal with the problems. They're going to allow me to move. But you got to figure out your culture, and this is a big thing that I talk about. Understand not only what's in writing, but what are those kind of off-menu cultural signals? How much bad behavior is tolerated? Who the untouchable people are? Who is connected to who? And if you don't know that, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball.
When you say, you know, it depends if you should leave or not, and we start bringing into variables of pensions versus the time forfeiting some of that and moving on to other places, I would agree. And then I also have a little disagreement, but that's what a good conversation is about. So I agree in the sense that if you are at your 18 and a half year, and you're doing 20 and you get to leave, by all means, outside of you suck starting your pistol and taking your life. And I would suggest you might want to wrap that one up, deal with it for the next 18 months. You can make it. Rah, rah, rah. But there are men and women in this profession who might be in year 5 to 7 and may have to do 30 and think, well, I almost have a third of it done. What would you say to that? And on the other side of it, they're working in the place that you're describing and their mental health is deteriorating and they're looking at another 23 to 25 years down the pike.
Yeah. Especially on physical and mental health. I urge people, if it's breaking you down, make your plan and get out. Get out safely, get out with a reference, whatever you need to make that next move, but get out. Because you're right, if we're talking 25 years, you don't want to put up with it. There's great departments around with leadership and management that cares. But yeah, on that side where it's short-term thing, you know, maybe you pick up a hobby. Maybe you you care a little bit less about your job. Maybe you you know, engage in some other way, build some friendships inside it to get through it. But yeah, those younger folks, those lateral transfers can do a lot. I work in a number of states where those lateral moves seem to really be the trend right now. And you find these people that their lives have changed for good. And they come up to me after I do my training sessions and they're saying, you know, this place is just night and day from where I was. I'm happy when I go home. I'm not yelling at my spouse, all those kind of things. Culture is huge. And let me say this, if I don't say it at any other point in the day, we talk about salary and benefits as being the two biggest things that pretty much anybody thinks about. I mean, that's what you're always hearing in every article. But if you're not putting culture as one of those top three things that you're looking at, man, every dollar you make is going to be canceled out by the stress that you have, the potential drinking problem, the you know, the marriage going south, all those different things. Culture, if you haven't been in a bad one, and don't wish it on anybody, think about it, understand it, ask about it before you you take the job. And if you're in the job, and not to sell my book, but I've got 20 different things that I talk about as signs of what a bad workplace looks like. And you know, some of them are common, some of them are a little bit more subtle, but once you start creeping up above 3 or 4 warning signs, start making your plan for the exit.
I know that in a state like New Jersey, we are different than most states here. This is not a state that is scrambling to find candidates for law enforcement. The numbers and the lines are still out the door for people to become cops here. Salaries are high, quote unquote, until you start breaking them down, realize they're not as high as you think they are because we're taxed at like 46%. So it's very interesting. You go literally 45 minutes over to Pennsylvania. And as a gross number, it might say 110, but that's like making 190 here because of their rules are different. Their benefits are different. Their retirements are different. People have a hard time understanding that. A lot of times people are very impatient when they decide that they want to go down the path of law enforcement, that they want to grab the first thing they can get their hands on. And typically those first things that are available are large city police agencies, major metropolitan liberal ran cities. And this is just a moment for me to say, I think it's worth exercising some aggressive patience and trying to find a place that fits you best and doing some homework, because you're saying, I'm so impatient. I want to get there. I want to get a gun and a badge and I want to get on the road. I want to do this job. You might suck the life out of your spirit at the wrong place and completely disengage. Or you might find yourself getting stuck somewhere, or you might get somewhere where they're making you work so much overtime that you never get a chance to work on where you really want it to be. That's happening.
Absolutely. And let me just add to that list. Or if you are in a place where the rules are anything goes and you're asked to do some stuff that is going to come back and haunt you. If you've got retaliation going on in inside your organization and you get hit with something by a bad manager, you get sanctioned in some way, and you've got to explain that for the next decade of your life, why this happened, those types of things. There's a lot of stuff that goes down in bad cultures beyond the feelings. It can be, bottom line, financial, legal, your reputation, you name it. Got to be a huge priority for people.
Pete, I want to give you a little history of myself. I got on the job when I was 19. So we sat here, I'm listening to you, in my first police academy. I was for the Department of Corrections, and in New Jersey, a corrections position is a sworn law enforcement position, full police authority, gun, badge, the whole nine. You're a cop, but you work inside the jail. As a matter of fact, now the patches for corrections officers in the state of New Jersey say police on them. So they got that change. So it says police and then it says Department of Corrections, because technically they are the cops. They just don't write tickets, but corrections officers, full police authorities in the state of New Jersey. Now, in the academy, a lot of instructors would come in, and they were universal. They taught corrections and police, depending on the topic. And so people would come in and say, how many of you are looking to leave corrections and go to police work? And I would raise my hand immediately. I couldn't get it fast enough. The people around me started complaining and saying, you seem so goddamn eager to get out of this job. You haven't even started it yet. And that would be criticisms that I would receive in the jail. I would have this guy who was a fucking jerk off, and he would say, maybe Benigno should start worrying more about his fucking job and not worrying about getting out of here and getting on the road. And I thought just the opposite. I did my job well. I did a real nice job. He was just very jealous because he was not trying to get himself onto the road or out of this situation. But I had already decided when I started gathering the data of where I was at, even in the academy, I knew this was not the final destination for me. What makes people stay when they know things are bad? There were people who said at that time in their life, young, early 20s, most people going to the academy were in their early 20s. And they had made decisions that this was it. This is where I was going to be. I'm going to finish this academy. I'm never going back through an academy again. This is good enough. And then we went into this work environment that was brutal.
Yep.
It was brutal between the administration. There was good camaraderie amongst the ranks. Administration was tough. The work schedule was ridiculous. Stucks. When I left, they were stuck 4 or 5 times a week. So you're working 16-hour shifts 4 or 5 times a week. It's wild. And people are leaving. You're losing. At least half the men and women who get hired are gone in the first 2 years onto a police department. What makes other people stay and not want to move on to something better?
There's probably 100 different reasons for that. I mean, some of it could be, generation. If we're talking about law enforcement as being a thing where in a lot of families, it may be multi-generational. My dad stuck around. My grandpa stuck around. That's what we do.
Well, I'm not saying leaving law enforcement. I'm saying, why not find another agency? Why not go find a better job? Because clearly, even though I've left law enforcement as a sworn law enforcement officer, I have a hard time leaving law enforcement. And the reason I have a hard time leaving law enforcement is because I know I can help. I know I can save lives. I know I can make things better. And that's why I'm attracted to come back into this, knowing that these men and women need somebody like me and the collective efforts of others who can help as well to show up and be there for them in a time when nobody's going to be there for them.
I just think some folks are just instinctively not proactive. I mean, you have some people that are leaders, some people that are followers, some people that would start businesses, some people that it would blow their mind to even think through that process. I just think we're all different.
Okay. A little bit more about my story. I get out. I'm testing to try to get out of this agency as much as I possibly can. I'm literally spending time, energy, and effort. I get to another agency. I go to this agency. I'm just thrilled to be outside and outside of a jail. I'm thrilled that I get to go to work and breathe air, free air. And
the door is closing behind you.
You have to ask permission to walk outside the building, go to your car. It's literally a nightmare. And now I'm at a place where you have responsibility. I have freedom. I can go get a sandwich if I want. It's like a whole new world to me. However, I'm starting to pick up rather quickly that things are not good here either. Far better than where I was. No question about it. Night and day. But I'm looking around going, this ship is sinking. And I was already, the wheel started turning again. And I said, I would tell people, I am planning my, matter of fact, it was very, very quickly that I planned my exit out. I was already at the academy. I was probably in field training, already applying at other police agencies. So now my second agency, and they actually treated me well. They liked me there. They were trying to get me to stay. They saw a lot of potential. And about half of us left that agency as well. You know, for me, sometimes I have a hard time understanding why people stick around in bad places. And, you know, fortunately enough, I was tenacious enough to spend the time to know that this is not how I saw my career going. I wanted to be able to get what I wanted out of this profession. And this was not going to be the place where that was going to occur.
Yeah. Let me add on one other thing. You're actually the first person that's asked me that that question. And I want to take another lap around and give you a give you one other answer. And that is, I think some people are in leadership and management that aren't the problems may think that they can do something about a culture beyond probably what is realistic. I mean, to get a culture change, to get, if you've got bad behavior rampant throughout the organization, you need somebody stepping up at the very top to say, it's time to shift things around here. We need to focus on getting rid of X, Y, Z things that are going on. We need to focus on being this kind of department. I'm working with a department right now on wholesale culture change. And, you know, it's getting down to that whole leadership. I should say that whole mission statement, vision statement, what we've got on our challenge coin. Do any of those words reflect what's actually going on in here? It takes that leader that's ready to jump in and change stuff. But you have people that, and I've seen some managers like this, you know, they spend a career 15 years in a place where they think, my job here is to protect a few of my employees in my department from stuff getting even worse than what it is now. And I'd say for everybody that's in that position, either the manager that is that's catching the arrows or the employees that are stuck, go somewhere else. There's a whole lot of better organizations out there. I mean, change it if you can. Leaders, absolutely change it if for the sake of your people, some cases for the sake of your own career. But yeah, if you see the warning signs and big flashing letters, get out.
Is there any truth that when you go to an organization and maybe in your first week or two, somebody leans in and says to you, hey, this place is a fucking disaster. My suggestion to you is get out as quickly as possible. I was having a Department of Corrections. As soon as I got there, guys were like, don't get stuck. These are lifetime. I'm a lifetimer. Don't get stuck in this fucking place. Get out as fast as you can. Yeah. And, you know, I'm unpacking some of this stuff from the past. I haven't talked about this in 21 years. But I also warn people about, don't listen to the first guy. Try to find 4 or 5 or 7 people and see what the collection says, not just one. You might hit the one sour person who may not belong to that organization. I mean, I tend to consider myself to be a phenomenal leader, with all humility. And the reason I say that is because I am doing my best every day to say, am I being what I can be, the best version of me to these people and serving them first, putting them at every decision I make at the forefront. So it's not that I'm high on my own supply. I'm some lunatic who thinks that he's this great leader. I put a lot of time, energy, and effort to making sure that every person at this organization feels like they're being served by me right to the top. How am I not serving you? What am I missing here? And I really mean that. The door is always open. People know that here. I mean, it's quite comical that people will come and visit us and a lot of my employees talk shit to me. But, you know, we're close. We're friends. And it's a welcoming thing. There's no fear of how I'm going to respond. And I really try to practice what it means to be a good leader.
You can't just take somebody's word for it, especially if they're that better person. You got to experience it. You got to find out all right, is this really how things work here? You know, from what I'm seeing every day, is it a one-off? Definitely. I mean, if the signs are big enough, you know, things are happening to you that absolutely wrong, in some cases illegal, immoral, whatever it is, run. But yeah, don't rely on a few bitter people, because they're always going to be there. That guy that was telling you, you know, talking trash about, hey, you want to go on to another job? That guy's thinking in his own mind, I should have left here 20 years ago. And he's ticked off that he saw somebody like you that was ambitious and wanted to do more.
Mm-hmm. What are three signs of a bad leader or an arsonist in the office?
One of them is the inability to have a hard conversation. I mean, with anybody. That's number one. Number two on leader red flags is that person that is frankly looking out only for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people say, every CEO is thinking about themselves. It's true, but they're also smart enough to package it with, the only way I get successful is having my people successful. So that the person that can marry those two, that's a good thing. One attitude, not so good. The third one is probably that person that, and actually, let me give you a couple. That person that is soft at the wrong times and hard at the other times, the people that frankly operate under two sets of rules. I'm a big football fan, and some of the coaches I've had the most optimism about are in the past have been guys that have tanked later. And why? And there's a common denominator to this. You've got guys that are absolutely loyal to a fault with their coaching staff. So they've got their buddies, they hire them, they put them on the payroll, but all the players, the guys on the field, they'll cut them in an instant. And it creates two sets of rules that just starts ripping organizations apart. From a cultural standpoint, a few of the things that pop up in big ways, definitely the two sets of rules. Gossip, where gossip is rampant, is one of those things that that I see constantly. And a lot of that comes from, frankly, people not trusting one of two things happening. Number one, they're filling in the blanks because they never hear from leadership. Or number two, when the leadership speaks and says, here's our plan going forward, they go have everyone else has a meeting after the meeting because they don't trust anything that was just said. And that's what gets the organizational gossip, for lack of a better word, going. So those are a few things out there. There's a lot more in terms of signs. But the worst of the worst, when you start seeing people play games with people's careers, when bullying is taking place, when people are using the tools of power to, you know, wreck lives, wreck families, wreck careers, and people not giving a darn about thinking twice about doing it.
What's the psychology associated with something or somebody who behaves in that manner? Is that indicative of a narcissist?
Narcissist. It's got a little bit of a psychopath that's in there. Sociopath. They call it the dark triad. I'm sure you're familiar with some of that, but they're all kind of cousins within this, this triangle of a borderline personality disorders. And the common threads are people concerned about I and me, never about we, the people that are heroes in every story they tell. Those are two things that you see constantly.
Yeah. I'm going to go back and I'm going to recant phenomenal leadership that I describe myself as. I'm a learning leader. Let me be very clear on that.
Did you just get a text or what happened there?
No. You know what it is? I don't want to be perceived as a narcissist because I'm not. And when I say phenomenal, I meant in the sense of who I'm trying to be. I want to be regarded as a phenomenal leader. I'm not proclaiming that I'm a phenomenal leader. I mean, I make 1,000 mistakes like everybody else. And the one thing I can tell you is I own my mistakes. Matter of fact, even when something happens, something as simple as passing a comment, you know, here we're pretty health conscious. About half the organization is health conscious and half is not. And you know, not too long ago, passed a comment about somebody who's eating for lunch, somebody who had agreed to join our side and went back and recanted. And I passed a comment about what, you know, like what happened? I thought you were on our side, you know? And 5 minutes later, I came back and I said, I am sorry for doing that. In my mind, I'm an accountability coach to these other people here, and they're accountability coach to me. So you should feel free and comfortable to eat whatever you want in front of all of us and not have to hide this because I'm being judgmental about what you're eating. Yeah. I'm your coach. I'm trying to keep you. That's what coaches do. Get up. Let's go. You got to practice. You want to win. So I default to coach, but I remove myself as your leader. And I just don't, I'm sorry about that. And I didn't mean to come off that way.
Yeah, I see, you know, some of what you described and what you just really did was reinforce cultural feedback, you know, and essentially said, let me pull back on that. I want to hear what you have to say, and you can think anything you want to on this. That's a big thing that I push within organizations, which can get a little tricky at some points of crisis within, you know, a police culture where at an incident. You know, you don't need a show of hands when a decision is being made. But, you know, that cultural feedback where people are comfortable telling you exactly what they think in a constructive way, that's a good thing. I mean, that is, that's phenomenal. That's what gets people's juices flowing in terms of being creative, making leaders look better. And that's something I talk about a lot. That's good stuff.
To dial it back quite a bit to a comment you said, be careful of a leader who's, and I don't know if we should call them leaders or managers, because I don't know if it's fair to the real leaders to describe leaders as these people who are detrimental to, you know, productive organizations. It said that you should watch out for somebody who's setting you up to fail. And I can tell you that typically what happens in a lot of law enforcement agencies is judgment is cast the minute you walk through the door. If you're a slow learner, but somebody else is a fast learner, but may not be as intelligent as you are, you're just a little bit of a slow learner. But once you learn, you become this, you know, really ninja-like person at the topic of the subject matter. At times, your career can be made in the first 3 to 6 months of who you are, what reputation is, and you don't get a second chance at an organization. Your reputation will follow you. And a lot of times those reputations begin at the top. I feel like for me, I was somebody who had a lot of energy, but nobody put the arm around my shoulder and around me and say, we know who you are. We know what you're trying to do. And I think you just need a little more mentorship about your behavior. And that's really a lot of motivation of why we show up as an organization now, because I don't cast judgment at the guy or girl who's the hard charger, who's full of energy and wants everything and is excited to be there. They're not, in my eyes, looked at somebody who is a problem. It's how do we take this energy and focus where it belongs? Because I would have done anything for my organization. I would have, and everybody knew that. Everybody knew that I was 100% the number one guy in the team, full of motivation every single day, enthusiastic, never complained, and maybe complain times when I found myself around other complainers. So where do we fail when we notice people are starting to make their careers for them in 3 to 6 months?
We fail in a few different ways. Number one, often cases not sitting down at the beginning and finding out who these people are, starting relationships with them from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Finding out, you know, within any organization, what do you want to do here? Tell me about yourself in terms of, you know, your interests. So those basic things right there. But in a lot of cases, where I say, especially those people that are at the junior levels and wanting to make those moves up, they are either tasked with the impossible job. I define that as, hey, the car broke down, let me give you this hammer and you go fix it. You know, what am I going to do with this? You've been given, there's a lot of different descriptions for that job, but you know, the impossible task. So that there is some of that as well. You know, we're going to grade you on the thing that nobody else has fixed around here. So it comes down to support in some cases. We are going to assign you something where we haven't done the blocking and tackling to help you get this done. From one of the things I heard recently was a newer officer who had who was criticizing what they had seen in the culture when they were first coming into the department of nobody, none of the more experienced guys being kind, helping out. And it was essentially an us versus them kind of deal. And the chief came to the guy and said, well, I'm assigning you to fix it. You know, he didn't have a meeting of the department saying, you know what, we want to do some good stuff here in terms of building up communication. We're going to set up a mentorship program. We're going to do ride-alongs. I don't know, mixers, whatever could potentially get people in the same room wanting to talk to each other. It was essentially go out and fix it, but I'm not giving you any of the tools. And frankly, in that point, when it became the youngest officer, you know, from a cultural standpoint, the guys that are entrenched, the new officer coming to them and saying, so you're I've been assigned by the chief to fix the problem of generational stuff around here. Nobody's going to listen to that guy unless you have leadership creating the environment to get it done.
Does a good leader understand that mistakes happen?
Absolutely. And they should understand first and foremost, they're making mistakes every day. So it is that introspective smart leader that knows, you know, good teams are going to come up with a lot of ideas. Probably 90% of them aren't going to work. But if you're getting lots of ideas, that means you got people thinking. They should know they're not perfect and understand that that you're going to learn from mistakes. Frankly, one of the best things these days, as I do some training around the country, is, you know, going through, and we don't do it in a condemning way, but looking at mistakes that have happened in the profession, in sports, politics, you name it. We look at those things and you can learn a lot more from, all right, how do we prevent this? What was going on before it to cause this chain of events? Then, all right, let's look at a perfect situation where everything went well. You can war game that as well. But I think instinctively, because there's a little bit of sting to it when life sucks, when when we make a career screw up, you learn more from it. It sticks with you more. Why? Because you've got an incentive to make sure it never happens again. Perfection is good, but there's, I'm watching my beloved Boston Celtics. You're probably a Nets fan, so you're probably going to hate where I'm going with this this conversation.
Before you even continue, I'll just let you know, Pete, I don't watch any fucking sports at all. So feel free to rock and roll.
But there's some reasons why teams don't repeat. I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons. One of them is guys can get pretty complacent if when they won. They can go around, carry around their trophy and do that. But the next season, they often come back a little bit softer. So learning through those mistakes.
I might be guilty of that a little bit myself, to be quite honest with you. And I think sometimes getting punched in the dick is a good thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm getting punched in the dick lately a little bit. So I've got a sore wiener, just so you know. But I feel like today was some weird turnaround day for me. There's just things started happening that. And I'm not sitting here saying I'm a victim. I am saying at times at night, Lord, just give me a break.
We are talking towards the end of the week, and good news is the weekend is coming. I try and be real positive. I wrote a book about a negative experience, but generally speaking, I'm a pretty positive guy. But I've always got to be careful about getting in my head, especially if I've got time on the weekend to, just hang out at the pool and that kind of thing, of dwelling over, all right, what went wrong this week, when I should be thinking about, all right, how am I going to start killing it on Monday?
I mean, I'm going to kill it through the weekend. I'm a little bit of a psychopath. I don't take any days off. I don't do 10-hour days every day. Actually can't measure how much I put in, but you know, I think that I've said this before, there's a wonderful excerpt and it was a 30-second video clip. And I say to my head nonstop, there's a few things in my life that were substantial, but it's a Tom Hanks clip. Did I send that to you? I thought I did.
Yeah, sure.
It's Tom Hanks. Yeah. And, for me, it's just keep swimming. Charlie Munger. I watched a Charlie Munger video, and you know, life is going to be difficult at times and the world looks like it's falling to pieces. But if you just keep swimming, you just keep swimming and you're going to be just fine.
Heck yeah.
Hard to tell yourself these things, no matter what you're going through, but you know, it's one foot in front of the other and showing up and knowing that everything is fixable. So we can get through a lot of difficult stuff, whether through business or work or personal issues. But I also want to say that nobody is sending a lifeboat. So if you know no lifeboat's being sent and you're waiting to be rescued, you're going to find yourself drowning in the middle of the ocean. So you got to do something. And, you know, sometimes I'm an okay guy to sit and have a session with of what's wrong, but I promise you're not leaving me until I tell you how to make what's wrong right. That's just the kind of person I am. I'm a fixer, survivor.
And you know what? You're right. There's absolutely nobody. And it's, it may be the worst and best moment when you're going through a struggle. Cause I know, I mean, I was in the world of politics, like I was telling you. So I had thousands of superficial friends because everybody wants to be everybody's friend in politics. They're not, but they're going to tell you that they're your friend because they're wanting a favor at some point. They're wanting some help with some crazy congressman somewhere. Worst part when my career blew up over the experience I write about is when I was making those calls and nobody's calling me back. It was soul crushing.
Good moment.
But the best moment that came out of it is finding out how many friends I've got around that were with me every step of the way, that took every call of mine. They're probably regretting it at this time, but they were great friends, you know, that took those calls and were like, all right, I can't help you at all, but man, I just wanted to give you 15 minutes to vent and I'm moving on with my day, but hang in there. I'm praying for you. And let me know if there's anything I can do to help you down the line. But you got to make your own luck. And the folks that are stuck in those jobs from hell, you've got to understand that you're your best advocate, your best defender. And frankly, because your family's riding on your coattails too, you're your family's future. And if you're not in the place you're supposed to be, don't delay it. Find that good place.
I want to take a moment as we sit here and critique and criticize and call out the bad leaders in society that we deal with and just give a credit to the great leaders that we have. I am friends with many chiefs of police, captains, lieutenants, sergeants, even patrolmen, union delegates. I know some people who are just wonderful. And I've said this for the history that I've been saying things. If it wasn't for you, this job would be completely impossible. So I know that you may only be a sergeant, but know that your men and women appreciate the fact that you take it seriously, that you can make a difference, that you're there for them and you recognize what that means. And I know we can spend a lot of time looking at the negativity, but there is a lot of positivity in this world too. And if you work for somebody who is taking care of you and you do appreciate, it may not be a bad thing to appreciate them back. And some small gestures here and there of, hey, Lieutenant, I just want to say on behalf of the guys and girls on your squad or your shift, we appreciate you. We know what you do for us. And that's all he or she might need here and there. You know, those people, they don't need it too often. They don't need the stroke too often. But here and there, hey, just want you to know, we know what you do for us. You know, if it's not clear, I think you should just know. And paying somebody a compliment, you know, hey, I noticed that look like you've lost weight. Yeah, and I've been working on a diet. Yeah, you look like you lost. You know, what'd you lose, about 10 pounds? Yeah, I lost 12 pounds. Just so you know, I see it. I see it. I see you there. I see what you're doing. Acknowledgement is a nice gift to give somebody. I have two more questions for you. The first one is, can leadership be taught? Was everybody born a good leader? Who's good leaders?
I think you've got folks that are, you know, they like speaking more than others. They'll stick their necks out. They're going to be the first ones to be the class clowns or whatever. So there you go. We got them right here. So you
check
got
my, the, check my yearbook, Pete. Check the yearbook. I'm not making that up. Class clown, 99.
Outstanding. But you've got those folks. But you've also got people that can frankly be molded in a few different ways. Number one, leadership programs. And I know there's a lot of people listening to this. They're saying, oh, geez, another leadership program. How about a leadership program that's built around, we want to create a good culture around here. We want to show you how to maintain it. We want to show you the ingredients that are going to make you move ahead in this place. And it's going to be good for everybody up the line. You're going to prosper. Everybody else is going to get something good out of it too. And that's the balance. I mean, so much inside of organizations, it's a one-way street. Here's what we're going to pay you for this many hours. And if you don't expect anything in between, or if you don't expect, okay, you're going to be leading a team, we want you to build relationships with your team, help them grow in their careers, all those kind of things. And I hear this all the time from various departments, both ones with great cultures as well as ones with struggling cultures, that you're given the job, you're given the title, and then to a certain extent, once you start moving up the ranks, there may be more expectations, or there's not. To me, there's got to be the expectation that if you're going to take the job, if you're going to take the title, more is expected out of you. And that means caring about your people and growing them up.
Outside of your book on leadership, what are a few other books that you've found to be very useful? Where can people find more on how to learn about leadership and what good leadership is?
Yeah. And I'm going to,
what are your favorite books? Tell me some of the stuff you've taken in.
Over the last few years, I have, you enter the author business, and my marketing budget was zero. And so what I did is I went on LinkedIn, and I would tell your folks listening, suggested to them, if they're not on LinkedIn, which is, you know, mainly private sector types of things I see on there, but lots of good stuff on leadership and tons of law enforcement leaders on there, get on there, sign up, and see some of the good stuff that's happening around the country for best practices, career development, you name it. But I've developed kind of a group of friends of mine that write leadership books as well. I'll give you one that wouldn't be on anybody's radar, but written by a friend of mine named John Rennie, R-E-N-N-I-E. He's got a couple books. One of them is I Have the Watch. He was a submarine commander back in the day. His slogan is leadership is a people business. So he talks about investing in people at all times, not in titles, believes in humility and servant leadership, growing people basically looking at leadership as the foundation. So the bottom of the pyramid, with everybody else up top supported by that foundation. That's kind of his philosophy. And then I look at books, Pat Lencioni, and he's got a
good last name. That's a good friggin' last name.
There you go. L-E-N-C-I-O-N-I. I love his books because they're all fables. They tell a little story. I will tell you, my story's pretty darn good. It's got some kick to it and resonates really well with the law enforcement community, but he tells a story and then you're learning along the way, but he has a number of them. The last one, John Maxwell, the guy's fantastic. And it's that thing. I do a lot of consulting and I say, you know, half of what I do is tell you what you already knew, but maybe in a way you haven't thought about before. And that is John Maxwell to a T. Love it. He has about 20 different books. Google, pick, or go on Amazon, pick your favorite, and you're going to see something good out of it.
John C. Maxwell. That's how I know him well enough.
See, I just call him John.
Are you ever met him?
No, I haven't.
When I ran a real estate group, Keller Williams had him come to Freehold Township, New Jersey, but I could not make it to the event. It was only like $110 a ticket, and I could not go to the event. I had some, I think, significant other engagement. I don't think it was like, yeah, I was going to the beach that day. I think like I had like somebody was getting married or we had a vacation. I could not rearrange my life. And, you know, I wish I would have been able to at least go there and experience that. I will also add on to the back of that merely going to YouTube and putting in leadership is a great way to start if you're looking to learn how to be a better human being. I think one of the best things about leadership training is you really learn how to be a better human being for others. You learn compassion, you learn understanding. And I think even if you're not a leader, the training is still very valuable. It really is.
And one thing I've learned, because there's, you know, you've got every different flavor of leadership out there. Just as a guide, I would say that from what I've seen, you've got the people that take the, you know, the aggressive approach that you, frankly, you are going to do by force. You're going to get things done. The things that I've learned the most from, because frankly, you know, I've got those blind spots. I've got the things that I've done wrong in the past, and I need to keep on focusing inward at times to get those things right. Those things that the leadership styles that essentially say you take care of business with yourself first and then move on to others, understanding what your role is and then building up your team from there. That's been helpful to me because I came in with from politics, big ego. That at times, you know, what's that old saying, pride goeth before a fall, and people of the mountain have you know, a little further to drop. It's all true. Got to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I enjoy engaging with somebody with a big ego because I just listen. Yeah. I just enjoy letting them go. And I don't know if an ego is a horrible thing to have. Because obviously I think I have a big ego in some sense as well, but that's confidence. People are getting confused with, conceit. I'm not conceited, but I do have a big ego. And I associate that with more of a confidence thing, but namely, I guess what I meant, I probably misconstrued this a tad, was I had a saying, I said it years ago because I was a cop for a long time. I always find that know-it-alls usually know very little.
Absolutely. They're covering. Always covering.
We had a conversation one time and it appeared that somebody was dominating this conversation the whole time. And so somebody said to me, wow, he seemed to really own you on that. And I went, did he? Do you really think that he owned me on that? Who do you think was in control of that situation? Who do you think was in control of that conversation? And he looked at me, I go, because it wasn't the guy talking. He wasn't in control of anything.
Words per minute do not mean squat.
Look at Mark Cuban on Shark Tank. I don't know if you watched the show. He doesn't say he is, if he's not completely out right off the gate, I try to watch him. So if you think about Mark Cuban's got wonderful psychology to it. If he sees something he doesn't like, he's the first one to speak up and say, there's no way I'm out. But he lets everybody go first. And what this has done for him on top of his billions in net worth is when people come in there, if they get an offer from Mark Cuban, because they're few and far between, he doesn't have to compete with the other sharks in the tank. They're going right. I've never seen them deny Mark. I've never seen the episode of them saying, I will not take your deal. I will take somebody else's. Doesn't seem like he ever loses.
Yeah. And he's taking notes throughout that. He's always got something he's writing with and, you know, going last, you get the most information out of it before anybody else. They're jumping while he's analyzing and coming up with his next question.
You know, there could be some missed opportunities, but I think you have to weigh the pros and cons of playing any game like that when you talk about missed opportunities at the beginning for impulsive behavior.
Smart person's going to weigh the field, take everything into account, and act accordingly. You're right. Every once in a while, if I didn't get that deal because I wasn't the first to get at it, maybe that wasn't worth it.
You know, Warren Buffett says he doesn't have to be right a lot, and he waits till he knows he's going to be right to be right. You know, and he said in your life, you only have to be right about three things, essentially. You make three good calls in your life, you have a different life than everybody else. So wait for that perfect pitch. Don't swing at everything. And I'm guilty of it at times. I'm at a different point in my career as a, you know, president, CEO, social media influencer, thought leader, instructor, father, business owner, all these things. And I'm constantly trying to, you know, learn the craft more and more and more. And on my side, I'm fortunate to have a little uncommon sense. And I'll give Charlie Munger credit on that, because if it was common sense, everybody would have it. And then I've got a good work ethic, and I continue to believe that I can try to be the best human being that I possibly can be. And really, and there's a lot of expected of me, and I have to navigate. It's a very interesting place that I'm at now.
Yeah.
And every day you've got to sit and figure out, what's the next best move? How do I behave? What does this mean? And thank God for 7 years of training. I'm not talking about lifetime wisdom. I'm talking about 7 years of constantly consuming podcasts and audiobooks written by those who've been through this before to know what to expect and how to handle these situations when they arise.
Absolutely.
Where can they find Pete Havel's book and anything else about Pete Havel?
They can go to my website, petehavel.com, last name spelled H-A-V as in victory, E-L.com. If they just can't wait another minute, they can go on Amazon to find my paperback or audiobook. So they can jump on there as well. Also connect with me on LinkedIn and where else? Twitter, I'm on there. That's about it. But yeah, petehavel.com is where they can find me and find everything else. They can buy the book on off my site as well.
Pete, I had a funny feeling this was going to be a good podcast, and I got to say it was a good one.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Great having you here, brother. I'm going to run and go run a company now because I've got 16 people waiting to talk to me.
This
is how my day typically looks. But I'm going to have salmon first. I've earned salmon today. I worked out. I meditated. I am hungry. I'm going to eat some salmon before I do that. But anyway, guys, thanks for your time and continued support for Street Cop Training. We'll bring you more people like Pete in the future. Pete, it's a pleasure. I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks.
Hey, brother.